Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters on this Wednesday, February 6, 2019. How about that? We actually got a proper theme song now. You know it's a real thing when you have your own theme song. Still in the same feed, but now we got our own theme song, and that's very exciting. So I appreciate everyone behind the scenes who is making the show a reality and also a success. The fastest growing podcast at ESPN, by the way. This is where I put the little asterisk where there's a little footnote at the bottom that says this is an unofficial factoid, but let's roll with that one. I'm Ariel Helwani. Thank you very much for joining us again. This is the MMA Reporters. Another week, much to discuss, as always, in the world of MMA, and I'm trying to keep a trend rolling along here where I don't duplicate the same panel week to week. So, first week, we had Jeff Wagenheim and Brett Okamoto. Second week, we had Greg Rosenstein and Phil Murphy. Third week, we had Eric Jackman and Jeff Wagenheim. Well, fourth week, we're switching it up again. We've got Phil Murphy back and Jeff Wagenheim back, a.k.a. the man in the shirt. Phil, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Wagenheim, 3 of 4 podcasts so far. That's pretty good rate.
This is like, you know, almost Lou Gehrig-like. It's kind of in that realm.
Well, Iron Horse.
Jeff, I told you after the show last week, I thought it was one of your best performances ever, even dating back to the beat.
That's not what the internet said.
Well, I thought it was great. So I'm wondering if it was a flash in the pan or if this is a new Jeff.
We'll find out.
Yes.
New.
We shall find out.
I thought I was always really good. We'll find out.
Well, you know, there was a moment there where it felt like you were a little bit resting on your laurels. So here we go, guys. Another week of MMA talk. Let's get right into it. It's UFC 234 this weekend. It's the first pay-per-view of 2019. And I am curious, right off the bat, your level of interest in this card. I will give you my take after you guys respond, but I think it's an interesting one. I'm curious to hear how you feel about this pay-per-view card, considering some of the other cards that we've had, pay-per-view cards, as of late. Phil, I'll start with you. Your level of interest in UFC 234 this weekend.
Well, it does feel like a pay-per-view in a market that gets one or two per year in that strong main event, strong co-main event with local ties, not a ton of depth at first look, but there are some intriguing local talents and some intriguing prospects as you go further down. So is it what our bosses would have wanted for the first pay-per-view, not just of 2019, but of the ESPN era? I think they would have preferred Anaheim 233 to have panned out. But I think those who do tune in will be entertained by a handful of fights on this card, whether it's the fight pass portions early, the ESPN portion in the middle, or certainly the pay-per-view, and especially the main and co-main events.
Yeah, and we know historically people have mostly tuned in to see bought a pay-per-view in order to see the main event. That's always been the one that sells, and I think this was a little different. I mean, I kind of think there's strong interest. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I'm most excited to see the co-main event. I really want to see the legend, you know, Anderson Silva. I want to see what he has left, and I want to see the rising, maybe a legend in the making. Certainly he thinks he's going to be Israel Adesanya. I think that those kinds of crossroads fights are always really interesting. We've seen some other ones, you know, just last weekend, Aldo fighting and not too long, week before we had Cerrone fighting with these fights where one guy's on the way up, one guy maybe on the way down, or at least some people are thinking it might happen. Those are the kind of fights that interest me.
I find the card to be incredibly thin, almost disappointingly thin. I mean, it really is a two-fight card, in my opinion. And I agree with your point, Phil, that there are some intriguing fighters on the card. Good local talent. That's always fun when you have the local talent fighting on the big stage, so to speak. But to me, it's a two-fight card. And I think when people hear that, they'll say, oh, you're crapping all over the card. I love these two fights so much that I almost don't really mind that we're focusing all of our attention, at least here stateside, on these two fights, Robert Whittaker versus Kelvin Gastelum for the middleweight title. And as you said, Jeff, Israel Adesanya versus Anderson Silva. And I also love the fact, I love when they do this, it feels like a little mini tournament, right? It feels like the winner of the co-main event is going to fight the winner of the main event. And so there's symmetry there between the two fights. Phil, I know that you work closely with the Australian market. Mm-hmm. The level of interest in the entire card outside of the two main fights, is it the same as here, or do you feel like for them this is a bigger deal?
I think it's a marginally bigger deal, only because if I'm an Australian MMA fan, Jim Crute's going to resonate.
Yeah.
People beyond that. And also, you know, I think it's not just a mini tournament, but I think it's something the UFC is doing that's smarter when they have a thin card, as you're saying, where it's main, co-main, and then a pretty steep drop-off thereafter. There's almost an insurance built in, right? Because if this co-main event was an equally interesting fight at 135 or light heavyweight, for example, if something happens to either fighter in the main event, week of the fight, someone trips over a cable at a local TV station, you're screwed. And here, say something happens with Kelvin Gastelum or even Robert Whittaker, you could still create an interim title and reconfigure some things. You'd hate to dismantle Adesanya Silva, but I think that's what the UFC would have to do, because there's no way Adesanya Silva can carry a card. So to answer your initial question, I think there is marginal more interest from the Australian market only because of the local fighters, but I don't think Australia is quite Brazil. We saw that at Fortaleza this week, where anyone who was introduced as a Brazilian fighter, immediate pop. And not just an immediate pop because he's from Brazil, because they know the fighter. Here, I think the Australian market is a little closer to the U.S. market in that they're name-driven. But just like if you have a New York-based fighter in New York, Gregor Gillespie, there's going to be a pop for him and some intrigue from some of the more knowledgeable fans in attendance.
And also, you know, if you're selling your fight card based upon a main event and a co-main event, and then everything else fills in below it, you know, a lot of it has to do with how those fighters perform. And we all know, we've all been around this sport long enough to know that sometimes it's that second fight in the prelims, you know, that one that you weren't even sure you were going to tune in for yet. You're like, oh, I'll wait till, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock and tune in for the big fights. But you tune in early and some guys go in there and they just kill it. And a lot of times those are the guys that we aren't expecting to do so. And I think that's kind of the way certainly the diehards of the fans of the sport approach it. I think that we've learned over the years to expect something exciting to happen from unexpected sources.
So I understand what you were trying to say there, Phil, and for the most part I agree with it, but I will counter with this. Here's my theory. Robert Whittaker is the second coming of GSP in more ways than one. And first and foremost, GSP in his heyday would always win. You put him in Canada, Montreal, Toronto, he sells that place out in seconds. You put him in the States, he eventually became a draw. You put him in Vegas, people traveled to see him. But early on, he wasn't quite the name that he was in Canada. Robert Whittaker is a massive draw in Australia. He sold out not only this card in minutes, but he sold out the card last February, the pay-per-view card that he eventually had to pull out of due to those injuries. But he, for a guy who doesn't talk trash like GSP, all he does is win. I mean, let's be honest, as far as interviews go, you know, there's not a lot of depth there. He's somewhat shy. He's not very colorful with his trash talk. He doesn't trash talk at all. He doesn't say much, but he is just freaking good. And they love him there. And they sell out, I think, in large part due to him. And I think what happened was the card sold out so quickly with those top two fights, the UFC felt like, well, we don't really need to add to this card anymore because it already sold out and the fans clearly want to see Adesanya and they clearly want to see Whittaker. And so do you understand my comparison here? He reminds me a lot of GSP. 8-0 as a middleweight. All he does is win, doesn't talk trash, but you put him in his home market and there's a special thing about this. We've talked about it in the past. You put Stipe in Cleveland, he comes across like a little bigger of a star, or maybe much more of a star. You put Rob in Australia, comes across like a star. You put Connor in Dublin early on, comes across GSP in Canada. I feel like what they're doing here with Rob makes all the sense in the world because you put him in Chicago in June, there's not much there. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel special, right?
I agree. And also, even look back to his fight against Derek Brunson. I mean, that fight either it sold out or it came close to selling out, and that was a fight night card before his star really took off and before he'd really proved himself. He was kind of back in the pecking order in that division that at the time was known for two things. It's depth, but it's also its age, because you were looking at Yoel Romero and even Luke Rockhold, who at the time of that fight, let's do some math, I think he was 32. Weidman was 32, but he was kind of an older 32. You're looking down. Rob at the time was the youngest fighter in the middleweight top 10 by a good 6 years. And then he goes and he knocks out Derek Brunson, and then the star starts to rise. He's also a guy with young kids. I mean, we tried to get him on our show leading up to the fight, and you know, his schedule's like, oh, I get up in the morning, you know, have some time with my kids. I don't think he prefers to travel to the U.S. He didn't do any U.S. promotional stuff coming over stateside, which, again, your first ESPN pay-per-view wouldn't have been terrible. I know he goes on your show, but he he's someone who I don't think wants to spend too much time out of his home market just because of the time difference and the distance it takes to get there. So I do think this is something we might see going forward. And yes, if his star starts to take off and he starts to get toward that GSP level based on his record, then yeah, you could coerce him to Vegas for an international fight week or two.
Yeah, and he's got to fight. I mean, that's the bottom line. This is his first defense of the title, and he's had the belt for quite a while. Now, it's not his fault. Yoel Romero missed weight when they were fighting their rematch, and he's fought a couple of pretty tough guys, and Romero twice and Jacare Souza. But I think that he needs, you know, that star power is generated by, you know, by having him seen in the middle of the octagon, having his hand raised, and having Bruce Buffer announce that, and still. And that, when the guy is pronounced as still the champion on numerous occasions, you know, it kind of, the star power sort of helps. Of course, you also need a foil, and maybe Adesanya, you know, yes, if he can take care of,
yes,
if he can have an incredible victory over Anderson Silva, maybe that kind of helps Robert Whittaker, you know, become 100%. A bigger star. But he's got to fight, and I kind of like this, that he's kind of a no nonsense. I just want to go out there and do my job, lunch pail kind of guy. Those are the kind of athletes, really, in all sports that I like. And so, you know, I have no quarrel with that at all. But he just needs those couple extra elements to elevate that power.
I say keep him in Australia as long as possible. Don't bring him to Las Vegas. Don't bring him to the States, because it does feel like a bigger deal when he's fighting in Australia. And I couldn't agree more with you, Jeff. Him versus Adesanya would be a gift. It would be as big of a gift for Adesanya as it would for Whittaker. Yes, of course, Adesanya fighting for the belt is a big deal, but Whittaker needs a guy like Adesanya. Let's be honest, Gaslam doesn't give him much to work with. I mean, if you want to find someone who is less colorful than Whittaker, it's probably Kelvin Gaslam. Like, there's exactly no heat there whatsoever, but it's a great fight. My respect for Robert Whittaker grew so much after that second Romero fight. Like, have you guys watched that fight recently? The shots that he took, what he had to withstand to beat Romero. Forget about the broken hand. He essentially fought half that fight with one hand. But Romero was hitting him with everything, and he ended up winning that fight, and I thought fair and square. To me, he's the best fighter, the best champion no one knows about in the UFC right now. He's the most underrated champion in the UFC. He does not get the respect he deserves, probably because he doesn't fight as much as others, but he is really good, and I don't feel like the fans quite have recognized it yet, even the hardcores.
Yeah, but on whom does that responsibility fall to start to build that star? And there is that X factor. This isn't a pure meritocracy, or Demetrius Johnson would have been more
sure
popular. There's that thing, that it factor that the fighters who are truly A-list fighters have. Conor with the press conferences and the trash talk, and he has mastered that game. Ronda with just her demolition, where she was winning every fight within seconds. You know, we had her here at ESPN, and people were saying, how many marshmallows can I eat in 14 seconds? You know, how many of this and that can I do in 14 seconds? And that became her thing. She was going through the division. With Robert, it still needs to find that it factor, and maybe that is the foil of Israel Adesanya. I mean, Adesanya is a very heavy favorite against Anderson Silva. That matchmaking is built for Adesanya to win that fight and to impress. So maybe that's it, but I know you're saying keep him in Australia as long as you can at some point for his star to really match what he brings to the table as a 29-year-old, 28-year-old, somewhere in that neighborhood, stud champion. You need to make him, there needs to be something appetizing about him to the public at large outside of the MMA sphere. You, the three of us can watch it, and a lot of people listening can watch and appreciate his chin against Yoel Romero and appreciate his striking ability. But for his star to really rise and for those pay-per-view numbers to get to the point where he is must-see television, I think ultimately he's going to have to come stateside and make himself more accessible to the public at large.
Well, that it factor, though, does exist. Just not in him, but in his presumed next opponent. If he gets by Gaslam on Saturday night, Sunday yes, in Australia, very confusing. If he gets by that fight, either guy he were to fight next.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we're talking about Adesanya as he is like it factor with a capital IT. But you know, imagine if Anderson Silva on Saturday night goes out and just shuts down the Adesanya hype train and just takes care of him like he took care of so many guys over the years, and Anderson Silva is back.
Yeah.
And then he goes in there and has to fight against Robert Whittaker the next time around. And what if then Whittaker goes out and just demolishes him? Well, that is a lot of star power, you know, at your disposal right there. So again, I think that he's a guy, not everybody is going to become a star by what they do on a microphone. You know, Stipe, great example. He kept, you know, winning fights. You know, some of these other guys, well, Demetrius Johnson, as you said, Phil, is you know, that's probably the best example we've had historically. Robert Whittaker is just another one of those guys, and maybe he's not going to be the one who's going to go and talk his way to the top.
Phenomenal point, because I really do believe that the Anderson component in all of this is somewhat being overlooked. It's rare that a guy has a title fight coming up in a couple of days and the next fight is infinitely bigger, regardless of what happens, right, between Israel and Anderson, to your point. Regardless of what happens, the next fight is infinitely bigger. So he has to get by this one little challenge, and then it seems like he can really cash in. So let me ask you guys, UFC would never admit to this, but we all know that they have hopes and dreams. If you're the UFC, let's just see if we're on the same page for the first part of this question. You want Robert to win this fight, right? Kelvin, like, you can't go anywhere in the
Absolutely.
States and sell out with Kelvin Gastelum as champion. With all due respect to him right now, he's just not that guy, correct? You can
correct.
Go to Australia. You can go to New Zealand with Robert. So we agree on that?
Well, I don't know. Dana White has said that he does not root for fighters. He just reacts to
I'm
what...
saying deep down yeah. in his gut, okay, we want Whittaker to win it for the UFC.
I'm just joking. Yeah, of course. I mean, certainly the marketing people there see a lot more potential with him than they do with Kelvin Gastelum.
Okay, so Whittaker's the champ after Saturday/Sunday. Who do we want to win the co-main event if you're the UFC? Do you want the, you know, New Zealand versus Australia matchup, or do you want the return of the King, Anderson Silva, going up against Robert Whittaker?
I think that they're going to want – I think, well, part of it is it's not just winning. Let's say Adesanya goes out and wins a close, tight, you know, a split decision. Neither guy really takes some advantage. I don't know that that really is a clear-cut – you know, advantage for Whittaker, but I think that the UFC would want the rising star. They're always going to want that rising star. You know, Anderson Silva, of course, legend, but his legend also got a little bit tainted from the PED stuff. So there's always going to be questions about that, and how sustainable is Anderson Silva? Even if he does go out there and knock out Adesanya, how sustainable is he going to be at this stage of his life? So I would say the UFC, given its druthers, would rather see Adesanya go out there and put on a maestro performance and then let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I think in the immediate next pay-per-view, the next Robert Whittaker title defense, and I don't like the caveat that because a guy missed weight by 0.2 pounds, it doesn't count as a title defense. We saw that with Anderson Silva and Travis Luter. It's like he's... the champion still made weight and still defended his belt. That aside,
I agree.
In the immediate next fight, I think Silva, Whittaker v. Silva, has more marketability because outside of the MMA sphere, people know Anderson Silva. They don't yet know Israel Adesanya, which is a shame. He's fought and won four times in the last year. This will be his fifth fight in a 12-month span. But long term, I agree, Jeff. I think the UFC would prefer Adesanya because regardless of what happens in that first fight, these guys are both young. They're both extremely talented. This could be the first of a trilogy.
Yeah.
And the first of a true rivalry at 185.
But it's also a good problem to have if you're the UFC. Really, you can make an argument for either co-main event guy having a shining performance and earning a shot at Whittaker if Whittaker's the winner on Saturday. So I think this is not a... it's not as pronounced as the difference between, say, Whittaker and Gastelum, where there's a big difference in the potential star power there.
The first time the UFC went to Melbourne, it was UFC 193, Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm, and they claim they sold out Etihad Stadium and sold 55,000 tickets. I think they papered it a little bit. I will go out on a limb and say if Whittaker and Adesanya win, they can do the same legit at Etihad Stadium.
Yeah.
I think it could be that big of a deal. Because, as you said earlier, Jeff, Adesanya will sell that fight. And you can tell he's already starting to poke Robert Whittaker a little bit. I believe he spoke to ESPN earlier this week and said that, you know, Rob's going to live off the pay-per-view points that I gave him for this card for 5 years. And, you know, he needs to thank me and all that stuff. Adesanya is great. Sometimes he pushes the limits a little bit with his trash talk. Sometimes it gets a little uncomfortable with some of the things that he says. But overall, this man gets it. I also love his line about, like, Anderson's a troll. I'm an even bigger troll. I'm going to troll the troll. I mean, all his stuff is very entertaining for the most part. I think that if promoted correctly, and you don't have to do a lot of work in this one, if it's Australia versus New Zealand, Adesanya versus Whittaker, that can do 55,000 at Etihad. You know the market, Phil. Am I crazy?
Yeah. No, it would do 50 to 55,000. It would be like GSP when he set the attendance record at Rogers Center, though I do fear that pay-per-view would they go back to Australia a second time in a calendar year? They wouldn't want to hold Rob for a year. That's the one concern I have. And then you're also, your pay-per-view would look a little bit like this, where I suspect and worry you'd have, man, a must-see, gotta watch, worth the pay-per-view buy as your headliner, and then a real steep fall-off. So that's my one concern,
okay,
is that if they win, they would want to do this again in Australia, because you're right, the gate would be absurd. But then you'd have a second pay-per-view of, what, 12 in the year in Australia.
But you have to, right? You got to go where the fight is biggest.
Exactly.
That's boxing and 101.
And that's...
But you're right.
That's a conundrum.
They plan out these cards so far in advance. That is an interesting one. But if you're going to be in the Robert Whittaker business, you got to go back there for this.
Yeah. And again, there are no gimme fights elsewhere at middleweight. You can't have Israel Adesanya, especially if he wins impressively over Anderson Silva, first round knockout, makes a statement, gets on the mic, give me the title shot, I'm coming for you, Rob, it's all there. You can't just have a filler for Whittaker in the summer, because that doesn't exist, one, and you got to strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys about this Anderson Silva versus Israel Adesanya fight, because I recall when it was first announced, everyone was complaining. It was around the time that Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz happened, and everyone thought, "Oh, you're feeding Anderson to the slaughter. You're trying to kill off the legend." All this stuff and more, and people felt uncomfortable with the matchup. And I was a little bit puzzled by this reaction. But before we get to that discussion, guys, I told you at the top of the show that we are the fastest growing podcast in ESPN, and in, you know, the ESPN family of podcasts, I should say. And
facts.
Thank you for that, Phil. And one thing that I think is important to note for the audience is that this particular podcast doesn't just teach you about MMA. It teaches you how to love. Mm. It teaches you how to be a better lover. You don't believe me?
Oh, I believe you.
Listen to this, Joe.
Convince me.
Valentine's Day, as you know, isn't the time for rookie moves. Leave it to the pros at Edible Arrangements to freshen things up. It's the freshest fruit married with finest chocolate, artfully arranged to make a big impression. And with over 20 decadent Valentine's Day gifts, which, by the way, Valentine's Day is coming up in like a week, guys. We could talk later about your plans. But for our listeners, their plans have to include Edible Arrangements, because they got gifts and arrangements to choose from, and you don't have to be exclusive. Very important. You don't, according to these gentlemen, they don't have to be exclusive. I don't know what that
means.
I'm
going to call my wife and let her know that.
It doesn't make a difference if it's for that special someone or all of your special someones. By the way, again, this is what I'm being told that they believe in. Okay, I just want to make that clear.
Buy one for, you know, my mom would want an edible arrangement.
That's
happy,
right?
Valentine's Day, mom, and to my wife. So my special someone,
aunt,
it's right
cousin,
there.
A cousin, a daughter, whatever the case may be. When you feel love, Jeff, share love with Edible Arrangements. Stand out from the crowd this Valentine's Day. It pays to plan ahead. Order by February 10th, that's coming up in just a few days, and take 20% off all pickup orders over $50. Stop by your local Edible Arrangements and experience love at first bite, or order online and have it delivered at edible.com. You see that, guys? When you make it to the big time, you have to read ads on your show.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've seen those, and they're nice looking.
They are
nice looking,
delicious too.
Much better than those marshmallows that we're getting handed around during the Ronda Rousey fights and stuff like that.
No,
this is much
is
more
nice.
Interesting.
You got fruit. You got
good
a little
fruit.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day.
Absolutely.
Next week we could talk about our Valentine's Day plans, but this Saturday it's UFC 234. So let's get back to the co-main event, guys.
Okay.
Anderson Silva versus Israel Adesanya. I was shocked at the outrage over this booking. What did you think about it, guys?
I think for a fighter with Anderson Silva's pedigree, coming off a win, if he's ever, ever, ever going to make a run at a belt again, much like Michael Bisping late in his career, it's kind of a now or never time for Anderson Silva. He has one win since, what, 2013, 2012, and that was the win over Derek Brunson a good while ago, and even that, I don't know if everyone agreed, but coming back from his most recent win, it's now or never. So you're not going to be able to get fading fighters and climb the middleweight rankings, in my opinion, if you're Anderson Silva. I didn't have a problem with it. Again, we agree the matchmaking is in favor of Adesanya. He's the heavy favorite. But I didn't have a problem with it, only because Anderson's not just spinning his tires to ride out his career.
Hey, the entire architecture of combat sports, MMA, boxing, what have you, it's all built upon fighters who have been at the top, who may be coming down to earth, versus fighters who are trying to build up their brand, trying to build up their legacy, trying to create a legacy. And how do they do it? Well, they do it by climbing over the older fighters. And that's what always happens in the fight game. And sometimes it doesn't work out for these guys. You know, Donald Cerrone was supposed to be the guy being climbed over just a couple weeks ago. That didn't work out so good. So, you know, Jose Aldo, to some extent, you know, even though he was highly ranked, he was the underdog last Saturday night. He's not too old, but he was the older legend, being climbed over by the rising star. Well, that didn't quite work out so well either. So sometimes it works out for these young guys. Maybe it'll work out for Adesanya. Maybe not. Maybe this will be this will be Anderson Silva's moment to say, you know, you want me to be the gatekeeper? Well, I'm closing the gate.
I'm no gambling expert, but I just looked at the latest lines. Mm-hmm. Adesanya is like a -630.
Yeah.
Anderson around a +425. I'm shocked. This seems too big in my opinion.
Especially for a fighter like Adesanya, who you know is going to go out there, be on the front foot, look to stand and trade and get the impressive finish. He's going to put himself out there. He's not going to be, I don't think Adesanya's going in there with a terribly conservative game plan. I think with his confidence and how he's trying to build his own brand, he's going to put himself out there and be on that front foot. So they always say bet the number, not the fight. If we're betting the fight, I take Adesanya. If we're betting the number, I'm going to pause, because if you're giving me 4.5 or even up to 5-1, I'm seeing on Anderson Silva, it's worth a look.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, look, everybody, you know, wants to get behind the latest trends in all around sports. And Adesanya in MMA is the latest trend, one of them at least. And so, you know, Anderson Silva is going to have to prove that he still has what we always have seen him do. He hasn't shown, you know, that great flash in his last bunch of fights. He's you know, maybe he is on that fading downhill trajectory, but we'll find out on Saturday when he gets in there with a guy who is not going to fight a conservative fight, as Phil, as you just said. I mean, he's, you know, Adesanya is the right opponent for Anderson Silva to show every single thing that he's still got left, and we'll see it.
And at this point with Anderson, I'm surprised that people are so quick to write him off, because if you recall, I know his last fight was like 2 years ago, but I thought he won that fight against Derek Brunson. I don't think he's looked old at all. Yeah. I know he was knocked out by Chris Weidman, but I don't think he's, you know, you can make a case he beat Michael Bisping. He's never looked like, you know, I know he's 43 at this point, and, you know, the odds say at this juncture, you know, he's probably going to start slipping, and he's certainly not as quick as he was in the past. But I don't feel like he can hang with Israel Adesanya. I don't feel like Israel Adesanya has fought anyone quite like Anderson at 43. And that's why I'm surprised. And what's so great about this fight, guys, in my opinion, is that it's not only just like the old guard versus the new guard. When Israel came on the scene, especially in the UFC, what did we all say? He's the next Anderson / John Jones. So it's very rare that you actually say this guy's the next so-and-so, and then he actually fights so-and-so. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they fight the same way, both counter-strikers. They both like, you know, to be flashy, a little mustard on their hot dog. It's that famous meme, right, of the Spider-Man guys pointing at each other. This is the fight. This is that fight.
And that's the thing. You've got a lot of variables here. I mean, that's why the lopsided odds perplex me, mainly because there are so many variables. I'm not suggesting that it should be the other way, that Silva should be the heavy favorite, but we don't really know what Anderson Silva has right now. He's been inactive a lot. Sure. So that, and when you get to that age, when you reach, you know, when you reach 40 years old and beyond, especially if you're not a heavyweight, you know, the skills, just things kind of slow down. If you're a guy like Anderson Silva, whose entire career was built upon reflexes and all that fluidity of his, you know, there's certainly the possibility that he will show up on Saturday night not looking like the fighter we've seen in the past. However, the other guy, Adesanya, has never really it's not just that he hasn't fought a guy like Anderson Silva, because there's nobody really who's like Anderson Silva other than him, but he hasn't really fought anybody even remotely at that level. So you know, I think that there's so many variables here that the odds seem to be, again, more predicated on, well, you know, this is the guy who the fans seem to want to get behind. We'll see whether the smart money stays going that way, or whether things sort of shift as the fight comes along closer.
And I think that is a great point for Anderson. His entire career has been predicated on speed and fluidity. And at age 43, that's what starts to fade. Ariel, to your point about us calling Adesanya the next John Jones or Anderson Silva, a lot of times when that comparison's made, the criticism is, oh, it's a lazy comparison. Who's the next John Jones? When Rumble Johnson was training to fight originally John Jones at UFC 187, Brett Okamoto and I went down to Black Zillions to spend the day, a couple days with Rumble and Henry Hooft. And Henry Hooft, I think he called Adesanya shape bender, not style bender at the time, but he said, I brought this kid in from New Zealand to mimic John Jones and to spar with Rumble. And I actually have that footage somewhere on my computer. I'll find a way to post it. But when they first got in there, Rumble couldn't figure out Adesanya. And at the time, he was only 3-0 in mixed martial arts. He was still predominantly in kickboxing. But Henry Hooft, a very respected striking coach, is bringing in Adesanya, smaller, but to mimic John Jones's striking style and his range, his precision coming from weird angles. So you have a very respected MMA voice who, in preparation for a title fight, saw the comparison for Adesanya and flew him out from Auckland.
Yes. Find that footage.
I have it on a hard drive.
Okay.
Somewhere.
And by the way, I feel bad saying this because both Phil and I are wearing headphones, but Jeff, you know you're breathing right into the microphone when you do that big, like,
it was the edible arrangements thing has really got me a little bit, it's got me a little bit extra excited.
If you need to breathe, just go a little back. All right. That's all I'm saying. Our producer,
I'll
Daniel,
stop breathing
there,
if you want me to stop breathing.
No, he's going to suspend you for one okay. week without
all right.
pay
all right.
from the show.
All
Speaking
right.
of which, how about this transition? How do you guys feel about Anderson Silva at this juncture of his career, given his past, given his two transgressions with PEDs, right? It's interesting. This past week, Super Bowl, Julian Edelman wins the MVP, and there's like little chatter here and there like, oh, wasn't that guy suspended for PEDs? But the NFL policy is a lot different. You don't really find out what he did. Mm-hmm. You don't find out. In our sport, it's obviously a lot different. But at this point, you feel the same way about Anderson? Like, you cringe when people say it's the return of the GOAT. He's one of the greatest of all time. Has his legacy, for regardless of what he does from here on out, will it forever be tainted, in your opinion, Jeff?
You know what? What has changed for me is not so much my opinion of Anderson Silva, but my opinion about PEDs.
Huh.
I think that, you know, this whole, we mentioned John Jones here, this whole John Jones circus that went on in Nevada and California and all that. And all the other fighters, the lesser known and less the fighters who couldn't afford to put up all the legal challenges that John Jones did, you know, all this stuff has really made me have a lot more doubts about what people are being tested for and what these tests really mean, and you know, whether somebody is doing something intentionally or not doing it intentionally. And so I guess I'm feeling a lot less black and white about that than I did if we were having this conversation
wow.
a year or two ago. And I know we've had, you know,
yeah.
we've had these conversations and, you know, and I've always been a guy who said, oh, you know, if you're cheating, you're cheating. But I feel like there's so much gray area now in this PED thing that, yeah, of course there's going to be a little bit of a taint to him just because it was attached to him. But Anderson Silva did amazing things, during the prime of his career, mm-hmm. and those things are—they're still in my memory. Those have not gone away. That's what I'm going to remember this guy for.
Wow. So wait a second. So if I would have asked you this question a year ago, different answer than today?
Probably, I was a little less feeling a little less cynical about the whole PED testing policy. I had a lot of issues. I mean, you and I know
yeah.
we've talked about this. I've always
my, this is another 180. Last week, you
no,
had
no, not not totally 180. Just that this was something that I wasn't as I was. I used to. My big complaint used to be about when they tested somebody that we didn't see the results fast enough. And so they would test someone, you know, today, and then they fight, the guy fights on Saturday, and then we see the results on Tuesday, you know. And I didn't like the fact that, you know, like I said on the last time I was on this podcast, when I go to the doctor and get a physical and get blood work done, how come I can get my results emailed to me the next morning? Why is that possible for me? And it doesn't happen in this sport, this multi-million dollar sport. So that's where that was always been my complaint about the process. But now I'm starting to really have some doubts about what it really means when somebody is found to have a substance in their body. So I'm not going to say that, you know, anything goes. It should be, you know, just put whatever you want in your body and just go for it. But I'm starting to have a little bit of doubts about, you know, what it really means when somebody is suspended for 6 months or something.
So in other words, you would vote Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGwire into the Hall of Fame. This new Jeff. this Lucy
Jeff
2.0.
I'm not a vote. I don't vote for for the Hall of Fame.
You're saying you would though,
but we're asking.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Wow,
I'm not sure about
Jeff,
that.
This is great. I feel like this is a whole new you. We can all change. We can all evolve.
I'm never going to evolve.
No, we're seeing evolution.
I'm sitting here breathing into the microphone for the next 45 minutes and just got to deal with it.
What do you think, Phil?
My opinion on Anderson Silva hasn't changed, but it was for Jeff's secondary point. My memory of him was and is him bouncing up and down between middleweight and light heavyweight and just running through people for the better part of 5 years. And champions, former champions, future champions, didn't matter. He was just running through people. You saw him start to fade at the end, but a lot of the guys he beat also failed tests for banned substances. Stefan Bonner, our good buddy Chael Sonnen. And he's not shy about that. I think he likes to say he set a record for how many banned substances he had in his system. So my opinion on Silva hasn't changed because I see a guy in the twilight or even beyond the twilight of his career at age 43. I remember him in his, I mean, let's do some quick math, 10 years ago, 33, mid early to mid-30s, who was the most feared fighter on the planet. And I think it was, if he was using substances, illegal substances then, and I think that's kind of the baseline for those who would say tainted legacy, is the presumption that he was using banned substances then. He clearly wasn't using as many as the guys he was fighting against because he was still passing the test. So the playing field for me was level, and he was head and shoulders above everyone for a good season.
All right. So that's this weekend, UFC 234. Two great fights at the top. Plenty of coverage coming up on ESPN+, Plus, on Twitter, on YouTube.
On SportsCenter Australia.
On SportsCenter Australia. Yes. Where can people watch that?
In Australia.
No, what's the channel? Is it ESPN?
It is ESPN.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on Foxtel in Australia. We'll have Megan Anderson on the show tomorrow to help analyze some of the locals on the card, and Brett and Gil will join us from Melbourne. They have a beautiful set up there. So,
you know he's legit because he said Melbourne.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's all I picked up
Melbourne.
On that last word. I was like, he really knows how to say it. I would have messed that up. I'm glad I didn't say that first.
Well, since we're audio friendly here, I just want to add that there's going to be a special presentation of my show on ESPN Radio on Saturday, 3 to 5:30. You can catch that on ESPN Radio National. And you can also, if you're not in the United States, you can listen to it online. So that'll be another thing to look for this weekend leading up to UFC 234. Let's look back at Fortaleza. And there's two big storylines, in my opinion, coming out of that one. Let's start with the main event. One of the major storylines of 2019 thus far has been the bantamweight division and the flyweight division. So now that Fortaleza is over and done with, now that we know what Marlon Moraes did to Rafael Sanção and how impressive that was and what he said afterwards, what do you do? If you're the UFC, Jeff, what do you do now at 135, and how does that affect 125?
What I do is I schedule TJ Dillashaw in a title defense against Marlon Moraes, and then Henry Cejudo, when he calls me to complain, I say, oh, yeah, you're fighting a rematch against the last guy to beat you, and that'd be Joseph Benavidez. And then that makes Henry Cejudo happy because he gets to defend his title again. And he gets to defend it against the one, you know, the guy that beat him. So that would be what? That'd be the only two guys that, isn't that right? The only two guys that beat him were Benavidez and Demetrius. Am I missing something else?
I believe you're correct.
So that would be Henry's opportunity to avenge the other loss that he had on his record. And, you know, at a certain point, I've had enough of these champ fights. I mean, let's let some of the contenders get in there and get their shot. And Marlon Moraes, if he had just gone out there and eked out a close decision, sort of the way the first fight went with Sunsal, a very tightly contested fight, okay, well, maybe I could see it going a different way. But he went out there and just smashed the guy. And Sunsal is not a guy that you go out there and smash like that. Dillashaw didn't do it. So I think Moraes deserves the shot at the title.
I agree completely. I said that 2 weeks ago when we were having this exact same topic coming out.
I probably heard Phil say that. That's why
it was such a good idea. Yeah. Coming out of Brooklyn, we asked, what do we do next with Cejudo and Dillashaw? And I said, you have a guy who fought on this card, Joseph Benavidez, who had beaten Cejudo, his last loss. Moraes, I'm happy he avenged his loss. As a neutral, I'm happy he avenged the loss to Sunsal because I thought he won the first fight at UFC 212. So that's his only loss in it. Some amount of time. I mean, he's what, 12-1 in his last 13 and 1 in his last 14, somewhere in that neighborhood. and we talked about this then, the Cejudo-Dillashaw beef isn't going anywhere. That's going to age well. You can do that fight at 135 in 6 months, in 12 months, and the promotional materials are there. There's no need to burn through that rematch right away, especially when you have a contender who, by all accounts, came out of this fight healthy. The timing works. You can run Moraes against Dillashaw at any point, April, May, June. Ditto for Cejudo against Benavidez, assuming all guys stay healthy, and we're right on track. Revisit it either in the winter or at some point next year, especially if and when the flyweight division goes away. You're going to have someone with Henry Cejudo's resume who demands a title shot when he is officially a bantamweight.
So I agree with both of you guys. Unfortunately, I don't think that that's what's going to happen. I think that they're actually going to do Cejudo versus Dillashaw at 135. I think they're slowly but surely phasing out 125. I think if you lost your last fight at 125, you're pretty much done. I think if you won your last fight, they're giving you the option to move up to 135 or giving you the option to pretty much fight till you lose. And I think that Moraes will sit on the sidelines, maybe get a new contract and wait to fight the winner. It bums me out. I think that they look at the number that first card did on ESPN Plus and the interest. And they, you know, in the end, Cejudo deserves a lot of credit. I think he did the best job of selling that fight possible. And they say, look, International Fight Week or maybe June, we'll run it back and then we'll figure out the rest. But I do not get the impression at all that they are invested in 125. I think they want to phase it out. Mm-hmm. This is the fight that should have originally happened. It should have always been Cejudo moving up, and that's how you phase out 125. And I think that, you know, him winning so quickly gives them the opportunity to do it. But I disagree with that notion. That's what I believe is going to happen. But my heart says what you guys just said. I want to see Moraes get that title shot immediately. He's not hurt, as you said. Mm-hmm. Dillashaw's not hurt. Benavidez versus Cejudo, the first fight was phenomenal. I just don't think that they believe that they can sell that fight, and they want to get rid of 125. So it's unfortunate because I feel like finally Moraes has a little bit of momentum behind him.
I mean, I understand that, and I get that they're going to follow the money. That's what the UFC is going to do. I guess the one part of that where I also get the wisdom of it is that Dillashaw, until he gets in there with Cejudo again, is going to be considered a diminished champion. I mean, he went down and tried to fight in another man's division and got beaten in half a minute and knocked out. And whether you liked the finish or didn't like it, it happened. And he was down and out. So that's the image that I have of T.J. Dillashaw, and he's better than that. You know, he's a guy that he certainly earned his spot at the top of the 135-pound division, but you heard how Moraes spoke in the microphone after he won. He was kind of dismissive of T.J. and kind of in a kind of mocking way. And
I liked it.
I did too, but that's not the way Moraes typically is.
Sure, sure.
And I think that the reason he was that way is because he was addressing a guy who's been diminished, who's gone down to fight somebody. You know, it's like it's like on the schoolyard. If you go and the kid who's the senior in high school, the toughest kid, and he goes and fights one of the juniors or sophomores and he gets beat up, he's always going to be kind of diminished until he does something to change that.
I think the reason he got on the mic and said what he said is because, Ariel, I think he sees the writing on the wall. I think he sees that Cejudo's going to get a shot at 135 ahead of him. So he was trying to do something to just drive demand, cut the promo, do what he can to get his rightful place in a number one contender spot to challenge a champion.
Right.
So I think that was more of it, not kicking him while he's down, but trying to find a way to maintain his spot in line and not get cut in front of by Henry Cejudo.
And very possible that he knows what's going on behind the scenes because Moraes and Cejudo share the same management, Ali Abdelaziz, Dominance MMA, so he probably is telling him what's going on behind the scenes. I get what you're saying, Jeff, but I disagree with that thought process. There's no shame. Like, he's saying that same thing, right? He's saying what you just said. Oh, you lost to the little guy, right? The little guy is an Olympic gold medalist. The little guy is pretty darn good. Like, to me, this idea that TJ is lesser of a fighter because he lost to the flyweight champion, Henry Cejudo, to me is just absolutely ludicrous.
Well, it's not so much that it's the little guy. I mean, the fact that it's a little guy factors in a little bit, but he lost. He lost a fight, and he got knocked out in less than 32 seconds.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a champion, if you walk around with a championship belt and the last time you went out and competed, you got knocked out in 32 seconds, you're a diminished champion. Whether you lost to a little guy or if he tried to step up and beat Cormier at heavyweight and it happened, you're a diminished guy. And especially if it's a littler guy. I mean, I'm joking about a Cormier thing, but obviously if Dillashaw instead had turned around and tried to become the featherweight champion and lost, the diminishment is a little less, sort of in the same way that I don't think Rory McDonald is as diminished over in Bellator for losing to the bigger guy in Gegard Mousasi. But if he had turned around and tried to go down to lightweight over there and had lost that fight, that would make him diminished. So you can't go out there and lose in half a minute and then walk around with a championship belt and have at least some people looking at it a little bit sideways.
Sure. And the UFC has a lot of work to do now with TJ because already he wasn't a big draw, but this is uncharted territory for them because it was the first time that a champion was going down to try to become a double champion. And it's also the first time since UFC 94 when BJ lost that, that guy. So usually the last few times it's been like Conor getting the second belt, yep. right? It's been DC getting the second belt.
Amanda Nunes
getting the second belt. Here, the one guy lost, so there is no second belt, right? There is no double champ, and now you have to work to try to repackage that guy. So it's similar to the Rory McDonald thing because I do believe in some people's eyes that Rory's star power has diminished a little bit after the beating, but this one's even worse in some respects. I agree with you, Jeff, that people view it that way. I just think it's crazy that they view it that way because there's no shame in losing to a guy who's just 10 pounds smaller than you and, oh, by the way, happens to be an Olympic gold medalist.
Well, it's not a matter of shame. It's a matter of just look at the list of UFC champions. Every single one of them won their last fight except TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah,
it's not a matter of saying TJ Dillashaw is a bum or something. I mean, the guy's a fantastic fighter. There's no question about that. But I think as champions go, his reign has been diminished just by the fact that he lost his last fight in spectacular fashion.
And to the point you made earlier, Jeff, about his diminished marketability as a result of that, I think that's going to further tempt the UFC to do the rematch to Hudo Dillashaw immediately because putting him opposite Marlon Moraes in some card, I don't know if that's strong enough to headline a pay-per-view. So while we asked earlier what do we think should happen, I think it should be Moraes against Dillashaw for the 135 belt. What I think will happen, I think it will be Cejudo against Dillashaw for that exact reason, because they're trying to figure out a way to market the champion. So here's your chance for revenge. TJ feels he was hard done with an early stoppage. We talked a couple weeks ago, didn't think it was egregious by any means, but there's your storyline, there's your promo, and then all in the weeks leading up to that, Cejudo's going to talk trash. TJ's, you're with the big boys now, I'm not cutting weight. It's an easier fight to package.
Let's put a pin in Fortaleza, and I want to ask you guys about Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic. Miocic coming out with this video, which was produced very nicely and perfect for someone like him because, again, not a guy who talks a lot, is very eloquent, he's not loquacious, he's not a trash talker, he's not great in interviews, so you put this video together where he's with his kid and really pulls on the heartstrings, and it's perfect for him. And essentially the message is, DC, you owe me a rematch. I would have done the same for you. I gave you the shot. Now you give me the shot. DC getting annoyed by this narrative saying, I don't know you or anyone anything. You feel entitled. You're not fighting. I'm not going to give you a rematch. What do you make of this back and forth? And in particular, Stipe's message that he's putting out that, hey, DC, you owe me a rematch because I gave you the shot.
Well, I don't think that I don't think things are equal in that sense. Stipe is not on the verge of turning 40 and basically looking at the exit door, getting ready to walk out and end his career. I think that if Daniel Cormier were 35 years old and had a long-term future in the sport fighting, and he was the champion and he just beat the previously longest reigning heavyweight champion, Stipe Miocic, obviously, I mean, Stipe Miocic does deserve a rematch. He should get his rematch. However, things are not equal right now. Cormier has, has like one fight left. That's basically all he's got left. He's going to cash in with his, if he gets that Brock Lesnar fight that seems to be floating out there. If that thing happens, you could say he's dodging Miocic, and he is dodging him, but he's not dodging him because he's afraid to give him a rematch. He's dodging him because he can make more money with another fight, and then he walks out the door. Again, though, if he was 35 and he had a bunch of fights ahead of him, He damn well rather give that fight to Stipe because Stipe deserves it.
Yeah, I sorry to just agree. I know it's not great radio, but that's exactly it. You look at the fights in terms of marketability for Daniel Cormier, and 1A, it's a John Jones trilogy or Brock Lesnar. We'll see which of those comes to fruition at what weight, if it was with John at 205 or if it is at a heavier weight. But DC's given so much to the sport. I think he deserves to be able to dictate the terms of his departure. He has said all along, I'm hitting the road at 40. And the manner in which he beat Stipe, while yes, Stipe is the longest reigning heavyweight champion in terms of title defenses in UFC history, that there was no controversy there. DC beat him handily, and it is a shame that you lost to a fighter going out the door that'll stick with Stipe for a while, but I don't think DC owes it to him to postpone his retirement, his well-earned retirement. He loves working with local wrestlers. We see him at these high school wrestling mats. He wants to be with his family. He doesn't want to go through the rigors of training and stepping in a closed cage with trained assassins. God bless him. He has done so much for the sport and had such a tremendous record and tremendous career. I think he should be able to retire on his own accord, on his own terms. And I'm sorry that it worked out that way for Stipe, but DC shouldn't have to fight to age 41 ultimately just to appease someone that he beat in the first round.
Yeah, it's all about the exit door, really. I mean, if Daniel Cormier decided, you know, hey, you know what, I was really inspired by the Super Bowl, and you know, I'm going to pull a Tom Brady. I'm going to play until I'm 45. Well, he's going to have to meet Stipe Miocic, and you know, that's just going to have to happen. But that's just not the reality. The reality is he's ready. He sees the exit door. He's ready to walk out the door, and he wants to, you know, lug a big bag of money as he walks out that door. And that's just not going to follow him out the door after a Stipe fight. And plus, you know, I got to say, you know, a Brock Lesnar fight is going to earn you more money, and it's a lot easier fight than going in there with Stipe Miocic again.
See, I like what Stipe's doing. I like that he's being aggressive and he's trying to get this fight. There are two things that I don't like about what he's doing. Number one, Daniel Cormier, you know, didn't, you know, like this fight, this wasn't a charity fight for you, the original fight back in July. This was the best fight that you can have at the time. You beat Francis Ngannou. There are no other great contenders out there. He didn't do you a favor. You didn't do him a favor. Like, it was the best fight for both of you. There was no one for DC to fight. It was an Ultimate Fighter coaches thing, International Fight Week, main event. Like, the UFC gave those two guys and that fight every opportunity to succeed, right? So this idea that, like, oh, I did you a favor, now do me a favor, to me is a little bit of a stretch. I don't buy that. But here's the more important point, in my opinion. I believe that his message, Stipe's message, is being sent to the wrong party. The message should really be sent to the UFC. The message should be, why aren't you giving me a rematch? Right? Because I think that if the UFC called up Daniel Cormier and said, we want you to fight Stipe, I actually believe that he would do it. I believe that he's the ultimate company man. I believe that the UFC doesn't want to give Stipe the rematch because, let's be honest, they didn't see eye to eye when he was champion. They didn't feel like he was a team player. They didn't feel like he was marketable. Remember that scene where Dana White was going to give him the belt, wrap it around his waist after he beat Ngannou? Stipe took it from him, gave it to his coach. Like, they were not the best of friends. Mm-hmm. He was not happy with his contract. And let it be known. And so I don't think that the UFC wants to go out of their way to put him back in that title picture. Same thing that's going to happen to Tyron Woodley whenever he loses his belt. So I feel like the real message should be to the UFC, hey guys, why aren't you giving the winningest heavyweight champion of all time another crack at the belt? Because I deserve a rematch. And there's a lesson to be learned here. It's a two-pronged lesson. The number one lesson is, when you're champion, recognize the fact that at some point you're not going to be champion. And it's probably best to be on the best terms as possible. Not buddy-buddy all the way, but don't butt heads all the time because you're going to need the UFC at some point. And number two, this is uncommon in MMA but very common in boxing, start to explore the possibility of an immediate rematch clause in that bout agreement, right? So that you don't have to go out and campaign the way he's campaigning now and sit on the sidelines. So there's a lot here, but at the end of the day, I don't think that DC is the foil. I think it's the UFC that he really needs to be upset with.
But I think you kind of answered your own question. The reason he's addressing Daniel Cormier is because of his relationship with the UFC. If he was, you know, that might be falling on deaf ears. So maybe he's hoping to, Daniel Cormier is a competitor. Daniel Cormier is, I mean, just think the fact that, you know, he went out there and lost twice to John Jones, and he wants to get back in there with that guy. He's a competitor. So, you know, maybe Stipe is just thinking, well, this is the guy. If I'm going to get this fight, it's going to be because I sort of got the juices stirred up in Cormier and got him to push for that fight.
Yeah, but Daniel Cormier has never been more popular, right? The fans like Cormier now more than ever. If you go after the company and say, hey, UFC, I did everything you asked. I went to Curry T-Butt to fight this guy. I did everything you asked. Why aren't you giving me a title shot? I think you'll find that you'll get more backing from the fans rather than going after the big, lovable Daniel Cormier at this point.
Yeah, you're probably right. And he does need to look at the long game here because, you know, like we've been talking about, Daniel Cormier is not going to be on that side of the game. He's going to be on this side of the game, you know, doing stuff that we do over here. That's what he's going to be doing. He's going to be commentating on fights instead of fighting them before very long. It's going to be, and so by the middle of this year, or at least soon after that, there's going to be a different person who's going to be the target, who's going to be the one who a guy like Stipe is going to have to go after or start angling to get a fight with. Maybe it's going to be Cain Velasquez. Maybe it's going to be, you know, maybe it's going to be John Jones. Who knows? But so DC, you're right. DC is not really the right target, but I think he's just trying to keep himself relevant. And DC is the guy with the belt, so he's going to like aim for that guy.
But again, I don't know if trying to get the UFC on his side is going to help all that much, because let's just project pay-per-view buys for DC against John Jones 3. 1.1, 1.2.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
DC against Brock Lesnar. 1.2, 1.3.
I think Jones is better than Brock, just for the record. But
so you know what I'm saying. Seven-figure pay-per-view buys for both of those.
Yes.
DC Miocic 2.
400.
That's what I'm saying.
Nice. Maybe 500.
And that's just the reality of the situation, the marketability of the potential opponents. So I think Stipe is in an unfortunate position, but if it would behoove him to play the long game, because if DC is walking away, ultimately he is on the short list of guys who's going to get a crack at that now vacant belt, whether it is Cain Velasquez, Francis Ngannou upsets him in Phoenix, or John Jones. You can only go so many names before you get to Stipe Miocic.
I kind of feel like his future opponent is the winner of that fight, which is taking place, of course, February 17th in Phoenix.
On ESPN.
On ESPN. Thank you very much. I sort of feel like they tried to book, by the way, Stipe versus Cain at MSG, UFC 230, when they couldn't find a main event and then eventually found DC. They tried to do it. It didn't work out because Stipe, in large part, was waiting for that title fight. It seems to me like Daniel's not fighting March 2nd anymore, so his grand plan of retiring before his 40th birthday, that's out the window. Clearly, it feels like it's a more natural fit to have Stipe fight the winner of that card, perhaps on the same card as the retirement fight, because if he does walk away and vacate, now you bump, you know, the winner of that fight to perhaps champion, or they fight in a number one contender fight afterwards. So I agree with you on that. Like, there aren't a lot of options, but fighting Cain Velasquez isn't a bad second option. I know it's not a title fight and you don't get paid the same. I fully understand that. But I just don't see the UFC going out of their way to grant him what he's asking for, given their past.
Yeah, totally. But this is an issue that we, you know, have wrestled with in the past, and I think we're wrestling with it more than ever. Not just with Stipe, but with, you know, we wrestled with a little bit with Demetrius Johnson. You know, he was not a big sell, so therefore they didn't really emphasize him. Tyron Woodley. I mean, there's at some point there's going to be the intersection of big selling pay per views and the best fighters out there. You've got to find that intersection, and when you stray a little too far away from having the best fight the best, it definitely damages things. So the UFC has to find that sweet spot.
Final thing before we go, guys, back to Fortaleza quickly. Jose Aldo turning back the clock, first back-to-back stoppage victories since 2009 when he was Jose Aldo. What a great performance. Great to see him happy. Great to see him celebrating with his people. And great to see, in my opinion, that he is no longer being defined by that 13-second loss to Conor McGregor, because I think that would have been a crime if the first line in his, you know, bio, when it's all said and done, is that. Because it seemed like early on in that process, it was going to be that. But he has moved on and he has done great well after that fight. What do you do with Jose Aldo now? And do you believe that he's actually back, Phil? What do you do with him? Brian Ortega said, hey, I'm interested. Do you go in that direction? And do you really feel like Jose Aldo, you know, is back, this idea that he's back? Or is he maybe just fighting lesser competition?
Well, I think we need to define back. Is he what he was in the late WEC days? I I don't think so.
Okay.
But he was a certified killer in those days. I mean, it was TuneIn just demolishing a very deep weight class, just running through guys back then. But it is so great to see a guy who had made public plans to retire. So at the very least, even if he extends those out, we know his prime has passed him. But to see him in a fight where the matchmaking favored the younger fighter, Renato Moicano, to see him win on home soil, albeit over his countrymen, but the pop was always going to be bigger for Jose Aldo to win that fight. It was the most predictable cage exit we've seen. I can remember that you knew he was going to jump into the crowd, and it was brilliant. And also following Damian Maia doing something similar, a guy he's in his 40s to get a win in front of the home crowd against a non-countryman. So what a great win Fortaleza was on the whole. Back to your question, is Jose Aldo back? No, but he's back in the title picture, especially if he faces Brian Ortega. It took minutes for Ortega to tweet out, let's start negotiating this.
Yeah.
If Brian Ortega goes to fight Jose Aldo in May in Brazil, I'm in. I want to see that fight so badly.
But it's a fight where both guys just lost to the champion. So is he really in the title picture? Like, as long as Max is champion, there's no chance that Jose is going to fight him again. He lost to him twice.
I mean, he can only beat so many guys toward the top of the division. He recently beat Frankie Edgar. If he beats Brian Ortega convincingly, yeah, it's rare for a guy to get a third shot after losing two. But at some point when you've cleaned out the division beneath you, though, it does seem like Max is posturing to fight Connor, taking his tour of Dublin and the Jameson factory. And Connor, if we go back to his tweet with him in the background with the sunglasses and Max beaten up and saying, I love these sunglasses, Connor's planting some seeds there, too. Right. So reading between the lines, it seems like those guys are considering that for their next fight. Jose's got to keep himself busy somehow, and if he's going to do it and he beats the two contenders closest to Max, he's saying, hey, I know you beat me twice, but there's no one else in this division who has a justifiable stake at that 145 belt other than me.
Well, Aldo and Ortega would be fire. It would be a great fight. But that guy McGregor, he also talked about other things. He lit a fire also under the possibility of fighting in Brazil, how honored he would be to fight in Brazil. And my biggest takeaway from Aldo is not so much that he has to fight this guy or that guy, but that he has to fight in Brazil, because that was just too dynamic of an experience to see what he did there. So I'll add up 1-1 and say Aldo against McGregor in Brazil would be awesome. And I know that I've always said that McGregor and Aldo would never meet again because McGregor beat him in 13 seconds. How could he do better? And Connor is never about looking behind him, but always looking to climb the next mountain. Well, the next mountain would be going to Brazil and beating Aldo a second time. That would be a mountain that does not come with a championship belt, but it comes with something maybe even bigger for him.
That would be a fun way to wrap up the story for Jose Aldo, right? Because you remember that scene when he lost to Connor. He was devastated. He was heartbroken. That footage of him in the locker room crying to get an opportunity to fight him again in Brazil, to right that wrong, it would be amazing. I don't know if it happens, to your point, this week and last week, Jeff, because how can Connor top that? It's impossible to top. You win in a minute. You still didn't do it like you did it the first time. Can I tell you one fight that I would love to see that has no chance of happening anytime soon, in my opinion, because there's just too much of a logjam? But I've always felt like Aldo has the most underrated takedown defense in the game. Like when he fought Mike Brown and those guys back in the day, it was just amazing to watch him.
I know where you're going with this.
Khabib. Could you imagine Aldo versus Khabib at 155? What a fight, right? What a fight.
I'm in. I was going with the crazy McGregor one, but that's what I was thinking you were going with. Yeah. And
that'd be so great.
In Brazil or in Russia?
Anywhere. Oh my God. Either place, really. I just think that would be a fascinating matchup with the way he goes to the body. Aldo goes to the body with his takedown defense, with Khabib's improved striking and his wrestling. Mm-hmm. What a matchup, right? Before it's done, I want to see Aldo at 155, because he's teased us about going to 155 in the past. I want to see him at 155 and see what he could do there. And I don't want to see him retire now. He's doing really well. Why retire? I do believe he's fighting lesser competition these days, like Moicano Stevens. That's not, McGregor and Edgar. But still, he's finishing fights. He's going out there and actually finishing fights and being aggressive.
And he was an underdog.
That's crazy to me. That is absolutely crazy.
And he's another guy who's given so much to the sport that I'm not upset about him dictating the terms of his departure at all. With his run from 7, 8, 9 years ago, for him, it's either a path to a title shot, albeit he would need some convincing to get that third shot at Max Holloway. He would need to clean out the rest of the featherweights or revenge. The Conor fight, yeah, the Khabib fight would be great. I just think 155 is so loaded. I just don't see how he would cut in line among all those guys, especially at once. We'd have to wait a little bit for the end of Khabib's suspension and all, you know, Conor's going to be jockeying for a rematch there. Tony Ferguson's going to try and do that for what, a fifth time, and anyone else in the lightweight top five who might win between now and then. So I'm with you in that his last two fights have to have purpose toward a belt or purpose toward revenge. And then thanks for the memories, Jose.
Man, 2019 may be the end of the road for Jose Aldo and Daniel Cormier. That's what it seems like it's going to be. And yeah, man, you don't get too many more legendary guys, you know, coming to the end of the road in the same year.
Enjoy it while we got it, especially if we're talking the end of the road for Jose Aldo, Anderson Silva, age 43,
right,
and Daniel Cormier, 40 in a matter of weeks. Man.
I was just about to say, I had so much fun doing this show, and now you just really ended it on a depressing.
I know.
Jeez Louise.
No, it's great stuff. We are in the presence of great fighters. You know, we're in a great place. So no, it's all good.
All right. Now I feel better. Great day. Great show, guys. A lot of fun. I like this little trio we got here.
You're going to change it up again, right?
Absolutely. I'm going to
definitely get changed up next week.
Yes, absolutely. But this is fun. I love doing the show. I'm so happy that we get to do the show. And again, I want to thank Edible Arrangements for supporting us. Support them because they support us. And I want to thank all the fans who have supported the show the first 4 weeks, I do believe. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing.
Keep us honest.
Yes, keep us honest as well, especially Jeff.
If I say something.
That guy McGregor, how dare you?
I like McGregor. These people say that some people online said that I'm
hater.
A McGregor hater, and I say nice things about Conor.
All the time.
And I thought it was really cute that he had his son at the Super Bowl.
Wearing a suit.
It was good stuff.
Purple suit.
So you told us, just quickly, Phil, what do you have for rest of the week? People can see your stuff in Australia.
Yep.
Regarding 234.
Friday morning Sports Center leading into the NBA doubleheader. We are dedicating an entire block of the show to UFC 234.
Wow.
Main event, co-main, looking at some Aussies on the card, some other fights to watch, some X's and O's stuff. It's going to be really fun.
And Jeff, regarding 234, what do you got?
Yeah, I'll be working Saturday night from here in Bristol, and I'll be probably writing some sort of post-fight reaction column, whatever the big thing that happens on Saturday night. I'll write some kind of a little reaction to it.
I will not be there. I'll be back here, like I said, doing the radio show and all that stuff, but we have a full crew out there. Chael, Brett, Gil, and the rest of the crew in Melbourne.
Melbourne. Fasting Conference.
Australia.
Melbourne.
And we will be back next week to talk about all of that and God knows what else going on in the wild and wacky world of mixed martial arts. Again, thank you so much for listening. Appreciate it very much. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.